I think I'll stop there. Yeah. Then we'll also have to go.
Right. So, let me see. Who wasn't here yesterday? Okay. For those of you who were, I'm very sorry, but I'm going to repeat the number. But then I'm thinking, look, well, this is marketing, right? So repeating the message means that you get the message more often than chances are that the message will stay. So I've been the task lead for a JSON4 project. So for those of you not familiar with the JSON community, that is where the European Emirates do collaborative project work with European Commission subsidies. In there was an activity on media and real-time communication. And in there was a specific task to explore WebRTC. And I led that task. It was 22 man months, and I forgot the total number of members. It was like 8, I think, and a team, 8 or 9. We've done that for a year. It started last May, so we finished this Sunday, in fact, but officially this Saturday, because otherwise we couldn't claim hours on that anymore. I worked for Unionet, Norwegian Internet, and I've worked with e-learning deployments since about 2009. So I've been responsible for establishing the Adobe Connect servers, doing this together with Eric on the Nordic level. Started looking at WebRTC at a pretty early stage because it did something that I hated it didn't work in Adobe Connect, which is the click and it works. You never got that experience, and with WebRTC you do. So that's why I got interested here, and then we got this task up and running, and now we publish a report. Isn't that fantastic? That report is available on that URL, which is very annoying to type in, I guess, if you have to do that. So I'll send it around afterwards to the team WebRTC. It's supposed to pop up at the deliverable portal as well, but it hasn't yet. On this site, we've also published all the materials that we kind of made internal. So those are not formal deliverables. They haven't been reviewed as thoroughly as the other documents, which may or may not be an advantage. But they're there, so you can see what our thoughts come from. So, why did we start this? Because WebRTC is coming, whether you like it or not, and whether we like it or not. So when we started looking at it, we realized it's a technology, it's not a turnkey solution. And that's in all the conversations that at least I have had with people who have heard about WebRTC but haven't looked into it, that is a very key distinction that you have to make. That is something I believe we learned. Because if you're not careful, they're going to ask you, so when can I buy this WebRTC? And that is not the point. The point is, it's a technology that will allow us, vendors, whomever, to build solutions that give us something that we didn't have before. And that distinction you have to explain. And that turns out to be harder than you would like. You have to explain it to managers in language that they understand. Now, luckily, most of our managers are or have a background in networking, that's what everyone understands. So the best comparison I've found so far is say, look, this is like TCP/IP. You can't say, I want to buy this TCP/IP stuff. What you can say is, I want to implement a certain solution that does TCP/IP. And this does it in this goes the same way. So when we started this task, we had a number of objectives. We wanted to deliver something that points a way forward, something that helps us decide which areas we should prioritize, something that helps us as an Emirate community, but also the R&D community at large, so the institutions. Helps them decide, okay, so where should we put our money, our effort, and what is important now, and what is still going to take some time. How mature is all this stuff anyway? Is this usable? And if so, what should we be using it on? You do a little bit of Googling on WebRTC, and the first thing that will strike you is that most of the services that you found a year ago, they're all very simple conferencing services, and that's where you can see the most immediate value of WebRTC. So that's one thing we wanted to look at. Okay, so can we use this to simplify this whole desktop video conferencing mess and make it easier for the users to use. And for me, with my background in Norway, this was very simple. I wanted to get rid of all those support questions that we got on Adobe Connect, which typically are, I can't get the audio to work. And all that stuff should magically disappear here. Is that false? So is that real? And if you want to deploy it to, say, all the 50 million users that we apparently serve in Europe, okay, so how do you do that? We wanted to figure out, okay, so as NREDS, we should probably do something useful here, and what should that then be? So how do we leverage this technology so that our community benefits of it? What do we need to do? And importantly, okay, so you can probably, so this is desktop video conferencing, that's a very clear use case, but probably there is other stuff that can be done here because it's something new. So what is that other stuff then? Can we already see some of the new functionality that we could be able to establish with this? And can we say something about that? So that were the goals. So we did this in two stages. We looked at the WebRTC technology, how to specify what it does, what we're doing with vendors. Also to see, okay, so how mature is this stuff now? And it's fair to say, I believe, when we started this, when we wrote the proposal, that was end of 2014. And at that time, all this stuff was still rather bug. You had like a 50% chance when you started the session that it worked for you, which was good enough for our purposes. But obviously, you can't deploy this. And the solutions that we used over that time have now grown to be mature enough so that they actually usually work, as we've seen in the call stats presentation. I mean, okay, so 90% of the calls just work without any problems whatsoever. Well, that's pretty good for a technology that's still being developed, I would say. Another key takeaway from the WebRTC technology exploration is that as of, I believe it was the 15th of April, also Apple has now announced that it's going to support WebRTC. Microsoft already did this in Edge, in a way. So that means that we now have all the browser vendors on board. And previous experience with the support for the HTML5 file API leads me then to conclude, okay, once that happens, then you're going to see a lot of more usage of that. So that means hopefully that vendors like Adobe have finally decided to actually jump on the ship and ship some product that does WebRTC. So the legacy vendors will come on board, but it will also be a lot easier to sell in products that come from startups. And that is even less worry once Apple is done on, okay, so which browser do you need to use? But already, in practice, this doesn't matter, at least not for the video conferencing. Because already, in practice, what we can do now is someone you've never had contact with before, you have no clue what kind of support they have in their office, you can now send them a link to a video conferencing room. You can tell them, if you have Firefox or Chrome, let us meet here. And then you can rely on that it will simply work. And it turns out it does. I've tested this a dozen of times. And all the time, it's just worked. And I've never had that experience with any of the other ones. And I'm hearing similar stories from other people. So, based on what we've observed, learned, used, it's pretty important. So technology exploration, based on that, we figured out there are some areas, specific areas we'd like to look at. Stunt turn is one important one. Thank you, Nisi, for finding out that that was important, because it turned out it did. Did you hear that? It turned out it did. We wanted, obviously, to look closer into the native WebRTC desktop video conferencing space. We got lucky in a way. Again, deployed its non-Google servers, so there were live test users, a lot of them. Most of the commercial services use peer-to-peer. Again, Altair's uses Jitsi, which uses a selective forwarding unit, so we have some stuff to look at. Looked at gateway to legacy infrastructures with the motivation that, while regardless of what we're using in our own community. We will still have to deal with entities outside of our own community who use other stuff, SIP stuff, H323 stuff, whatever, for reasons that we can't change. Healthcare comes to mind, government, banking. We looked a lot at a concept of contextual communication, embedding real-time communication in web applications. And we looked at how WebRTC relates to unified communication, because that's what the majority of institutions will be using in a number of years. So that's the legacy deployment that WebRTC has to relate to. And we spent some time on community building, contributing actively to this community, and presenting our results. So trying to be, despite the fact that, trying to be an open project, which we believe is important. So this time I'm not going to go through each and every recommendation. So from the work that we've done, looking at technology, doing specific tech scouts, we had a lot of discussions in the TAS team and with the outside world, vendors, etc. So from all those observations, discussions, work, we came at two strategic goals for the R&E community, which is this stuff is mature enough to use, so you should use it, and you should do that now. You shouldn't be waiting another year or two looking at it. No, get your hands dirty. Start digging. The other piece of the goal is to facilitate the adoption of WebRTC for contextual communication. And that, we believe, is a very interesting one. Where before, so no one uses real-time communication as their actual job. It's very few people who do that, who are getting paid to talk. Politicians come to mind, comedians, but not that many more. Most people have some sort of reasons why they want to talk. So they want to do research together, they want to be making some diagram together, design a rocket together, do teaching, whatever it is. It's always there's some reason, something they need to get done, and they're using real-time communication as a tool to get that done. Well, to support their job, they usually have web-based tools these days. But every time you want to talk to someone, you have to go out of your tooling, and then you have to hop into Microsoft's and Cisco's and Adobe's idea about how you communicate. And with WebRTC, we can now turn that around. You can simply embed real-time communication in the tooling that you use to get your job done in a relatively easy and cheap way. At the moment, still not as easy and cheap as it can be, but hey, it's been like 2 years since that technology came. So this holds very great promise for incorporating, embedding real-time communication in virtual learning environments, in LMSs, in wikis, in whatever you can find, NOC support systems, and that has a number of implications. Steve? So to stick with the contextual communication, if as a community we buy into that, if as a community we want our institutions to do this, then that means a number of things have to be available. Very important, you need to have access to this stuff one way or the other. So the beauty with WebRTC peer-to-peer is that you can do real-time communication without any central infrastructure whatsoever, aside from Stunturn. No Stunturn, you have a failing technology. Because then 10% of the calls will fail. And the example I used yesterday, if your car doesn't start 10 out of 100 times, then you ditch it. So the same would go for this technology. So that's a bit that Enron actually can deliver. So we're perfectly well placed to give our community something like that. Capability building is another crucial thing that our community network has to do. We have to get from the point where you mention WebRTC and someone says, ah, yeah, that is like Adobe and the web browser, right? To the point where they actually can use the technology. And to do that, you need to build a technical capability. You also need managers to understand that this technical capability needs to build, and for that they need to understand what they get out of it. And that is something we can stimulate as a community, as an NREM, as a GeoM community. You get into some more vague concepts. If you consider how WebRTC allows you to decompose the functionality that's currently typically being offered by various real-time communication products, so where you get like a virtual room, like Adobe does. With WebRTC, you can now split it up in, well, I would like to have the video element, but not the audio. So you can see someone but you can't talk to them. I guess usually the other way around is probably more useful. But maybe for security camera applications or wildlife cameras, this is actually quite nice. Yeah, quite nice. And now you can at least choose. You can use this element, I want this element, I don't want. Once you have that, you start thinking, okay, so if you want to use this on a larger scale, does everyone really want to specify all these elements? Or should there be some service that then brings them together in kind of like higher level abstracts where you could ask for like, give me a typical functional digital classroom with a teacher, student, multiple students approach, or for group discussions. Once you buy into that, then you could have something that offers this type of high-level abstract functionality, and you could imagine adding stuff to that again. Like, for example, a reporting service. You would have a one-point reporting service, and you could have the give me a digital classroom, and let me record it at the same time, and then plug it into the media management service that my country happens to use, or my institution. And it should all be possible. Some years down the line. We looked a bit on unified communication, as I said, and we identified that there are two major impacts that WebRTC has on unified communication. Obviously, it makes it easier to use because now you could create guest clients that use WebRTC so they can run in the browser and still have high quality RTC. Okay, fantastic. Making guest use easier. Good. There's a disadvantage, which is described as deunifying. And I tried to explain this yesterday. If a user uses... No, let me start it. If we start to have real-time communication embedded in all sorts of web applications, then that's where the user is going to be. And that's where the user is going to be present. And that means that the value of the presence information in the unified communication client is going to diminish because the calls aren't happening there. The calls are happening inside the tool. So rather than gathering all the communication lines that a user has in one unified communication solution, you can see them kind of exploding into each and every application that the user is using. Which presumably would then have an impact on the business case for unified communication. As it's not only unified. We sketched out some thoughts on what that means, and they're all in the report. But there's no easy solution to that, so it's going to be fun to see what the vendors are going to do in response to that. We've looked at what does this mean for physical rooms, and this wasn't purely inspired by WebRTC. When it comes to physical meeting rooms and the equipment that you need to move physical meeting rooms to other physical meeting rooms, video conferencing, a trend that we already saw was inspired again by unified communication deployments, where you saw people moving away from H3 to 3 SIP-based appliances, and they were moving towards stuff that supports their unified communication. And then you see institutions pondering, well, now I would like to have this stuff in all the physical rooms in my building. And they do the math and they find out, if we buy this stuff, the certified stuff, then it's at a price point that we can't afford it. So that's at least one of our institutions. Obviously, this is going to change over time, the price point argument. The stuff is going to get cheaper, but only up to a certain point. Regardless, you have to consider that, okay, I want to run a software unified communication client on there because that's what I'm using, but I would also like to be able to use whatever the people I'm talking with who don't want to use my stuff, I would like to be able to use that. Because as an R&E institution, you have to deal with people who use what you're using and who use everything else that is available. And you would like to be able to run that because it makes your life easier. That then leads to the conclusion that, well, if that is what you want, then obviously you should stop buying dedicated units and you should start buying a more general hardware approach where you decouple the physical hardware that you need, like the cameras and the microphones and the speakers and the platform you run something on, from the actual software that you're using to do the real-time communication. So that gives you a way more generic platform. And bending that investment stream is really important because it, once it's invested, it takes 5 years for the rooms to be upgraded, typically. And that's a hard thing to change. No one's going to invest a huge amount of money in rooms that have just been equipped unless there's a really good reason. Usually people don't have that kind of money again until some years have gone by. Something that struck us, I mentioned that yesterday as well, it was a thought that we hadn't actually thought before. It was like, hey, if you buy into this notion of contextual communication and that that's going to be a big thing, then that does mean that each and every application in which you embed real-time communication can all of a sudden become a video conferencing application, which then needs to be able to be served up inside a room. And that is something we don't have for today. So that's a new situation. But again, that only strengthens the earlier case for having a more generic platform in your conference rooms. Last but not least, we know that there is a data channel. But we didn't have the time to look more closely to that. As far as I know, the market is also looking at it and also doesn't really know yet what kind of fantastic things you can do with that. I remember the example of the Ericsson excavator, where you would use real-time communication, including the data channel, for doing command and control of a remotely controlled excavator. Okay, so remotely controlled vehicles is one obvious candidate. When we were discussing the web tutor example that Ruby is going to present, it struck us that, hey, this is the same situation as if you would have, like, a doctor-patient interaction. Oh, if you would have a doctor-patient interaction, wouldn't it be cool if you would have, like, an eye device on your wrist that then send your doctor some key medical data about you so that your doctor could actually know what is really going on with you? Wouldn't you be able to use that real-time data channel for that? Yeah, probably you would. So you can see that in that space, there must be something that R&E can use. Because we have a lot of people that do stuff with sensors and audio video transmission. You could contemplate, let's see, in Trondheim I know that they're deploying sniffers for air quality. Well, wouldn't it be cool if you could just attach a camera to one of those sniffers so that you could actually correlate air quality with exact local weather conditions? There was a lot of wind there that destroyed air quality because the cleaning car hadn't been there yet when spring comes. Okay, then you have an explanation which you could use to do certain things. That is what I wanted to say. The report is available there. There's a lot more than what I've said about it. But I thought all of you are very capable of reading. If you just want to jump to the recommendations that we gave, they're all in the last chapter. I believe it's like 2 or 3 pages. And then you can just read on the background of them that you find interesting. So you don't actually have to read all of the thing in order to find what you find interesting.
tax cut documents, obviously.
Yes, so what we've done in the main report, we did a summary of WebRTC as a technology and some contemplations around that, and some statements about how mature we believe certain things to be. In the chapter after that, we took every tech scout that we did, we gave the reason why we thought it was interesting, we summed up its conclusions, and then we discussed it in combination with the other tech scouts and observations that we've done, and then we come to some recommendations for the Xi'an community and for Edmonds and other Indian institutions. So this work is now done. In the next phase of the Xi'an project for the next nearly 3 years, work on WebRTC is going to continue. And I believe there will be two people talking about that.
Yeah. So, if you are done, I don't know, Peter or Bart, if you start to speak about the task four and the task five, the next Xi'an phase, and how they pick up there.
Any questions so far? Nah, you've heard it all before.